I'd call the meeting of the first House Committee on Greater Minnesota Economic and Workforce Development Policy to order. Okay, the Committee of Legislative Assistant will note the roll. Okay, we have quorum present, so we'll proceed. First thing I want to do is thank the members that are here. This is going to be a good committee, I believe. I think we have a lot of open doors here for to do some good stuff across greater Minnesota. Unfortunately, the chairman, Bob Gunther, is ill today and he couldn't be here. So keep him in your prayers. I'd like to talk a little bit, speak to the committee about some of the things that we're going to do here. One of the things is I think most of you know, you want to wait for the chair to recognize you before you speak. If you don't catch my eye, try to grab the CA or the CLA and let them know that you want to speak. In the committee, it's important to address comments, questions, and motions through the chair. So when you talk, just address me and then whoever you want to speak to after, and then you'll be recognized. That said, I think that when we go around the room today, we have a lot of opportunity, I guess, in our areas, and I want to hear from you what you might have in mind as we go through your introductions. So, all right. First thing I'd like to do is ask the staff if they would be willing to tell us a little bit about themselves, give us their name, and I guess we can start right here at the end of the table and then work our way around if you guys want to go ahead.
Bill Galan, GOP Research.
I'm Ben Weeks. I'm new in House Research this year and I'll be working on labor and employment policy.
And I'm Anita Newman. I'm old in House Research and I'll do economic development and job training.
Rebecca Mead, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Laura Larson, I'm the Committee Administrator.
Okay, then we'll start with the representatives. Representative Mahoney, would you
I'm like the guy in the end. I'm Representative Tim Mahoney. I represent District 67A. I've spent 16 years here, I think, and I've always sat on the Economic Development Committee. I'm looking forward to seeing how we do rural economic development, but my one word of advice to anybody who's never sat on this committee, if you've got a question and the chair can't answer it, I bet you Anita Newman can.
State Rep Bob Barrett from Chisago County, third term in the legislature, first time on an economic development committee, serve on taxes as well, higher ed, and that's it, I guess. So this is a very important committee from my perspective, from the people I represent. You know, we're Chisago County, we're right outside of the metro area, so we're, I guess, considered ex-urban. We're right on the Wisconsin border, and so what I often say is we compete with Wisconsin and the Twin Cities metro area, and in many cases not very effectively, just because of the issues we have. Wisconsin, their commercial industrial property tax is half of what it is in Minnesota, and also I think the metro area has some advantages, fiscal disparities being the most obvious, but many others as well, in which it makes us a little bit harder to compete. So I'm looking forward to the committee and hope we can do some good work this year. For this committee, I actually invited some folks down. We have some EDA folks from our county and also the local cities, North Branch, Lindstrom, Wyoming, Taylor's Falls, Center City, and they're here today. And if you guys don't mind, I'd just like them to stand up and be accounted for so we can welcome them to the committee. So I brought them down here just, we had a brief meeting beforehand, and we're looking to get ideas that we can bring forward to the committee, to the state, and also look for ideas that we can implement ourselves to further economic development in Chisago County. So thanks everyone for coming, and look forward to all the good work we'll do this year.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Serena Moran. I represent District 65A in St. Paul. My district is right outside of the Capitol, west of the Capitol on University Avenue. And this is my first time in this committee, so I am, it's kind of like bittersweet, you know. I've always wanted to venture off the committees that I, you know, have been on before, like Health and Human Services and Education and housing and things like that. Those are the issues that are really impacting my community. But so is job training and workforce development. You know, we know that there are, you know, we have data about the disparities within, you know, communities of color. And we definitely need workforce development. So my hope was kind of like, you know, we'll just focus on rural community when there are such great needs, you know, beyond the rural community, with special emphasis on low-income communities and communities of color. And so it's kind of bittersweet. I'm happy to be a part of a workforce development committee that focuses on job creation and training and apprenticeship and things like that, but also a little disappointed if we are only going to focus on the rural community. But glad to be here today.
I'm Marion O'Neill, and I serve Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake out in Wright County. And it's one of the fastest growing counties just outside the metro area. And I like to say that we're a bedroom community, so there's lots of commuting. And that's a great concern for greater Minnesota is transportation, the roads, the bridges. I-94 is under construction right now. I'm really excited about that. And I also am incredibly passionate about workforce development and providing the best workforce you possibly can to the industry here in Minnesota. And one out of seven jobs in Minnesota is in manufacturing, which we don't talk about enough. And I think that it's really important for us to look at manufacturing facilities here and supporting them through a lot of different means. But I'm also on the higher ed committee and the vice chair of that. So I'm really excited about partnering together and kind of looking at that as one cog in the whole the whole system of what we need to do to make Minnesota the best place we possibly can for business and industry. And this is a really exciting committee for me because the other part about my life is that I actually grew up in the Bagley area, not too far from Foston, where our chair is from. And I look around the room and I see representatives from the area that I grew up in. And so it feels like I'm coming home in a way and representing the Bagley, Bemidji, Foston area, which is where I grew up. So I'm really excited to bring that perspective here as well, even though now I live in Wright County.
Good afternoon, David Dill. I represent all of northeastern Minnesota from International Falls to Duluth up to the tip of the Arrowhead. We're dominated by iron mines, paper making, logging, and tourism. In the coming years, about 80% of the workforce in the iron mines, about 5,000 to 6,000 people directly working in the mines will be retiring. We have an incredible need for, these are very, very high paying jobs. My son's classmate from high school 6 years ago makes in excess of $100,000 as a welder plus 401k vacation and all the other things, health insurance, etc., working in a mine. But we have a critical, and he's a welder. We just have a critical need to retrain workforce that is specific to jobs that are related to both the paper making industry, the iron mining industry, and the tourism industry. But the tourism industry most suffers from something that we don't suffer from paper making, logging, and iron mining is the availability of affordable housing. In Cook County, which is the up where Grand Marais is, the county has the highest property tax, the highest property wealth per capita in the entire state. They have the lowest property tax rate in the entire state. But there are literally people sleeping in yurts so that they can have a job in the tourism industry because there is no housing. So this committee kind of strikes both sides of the issues up in the northeastern Minnesota being vastly rural, much like the Northwest, where we have a workforce development issue in the coming decade and we have a housing issue at hand immediately. And with that, that's the reason I'm participating and asked to be on this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Deb Keel. I'm from District 1B, which encompasses Polk, Red Lake, and most of Pennington County, aside from Thief River Falls in Pennington. I am a farmer by trade, and this interests me, this committee, and I'm thankful to be on it because there's a lot of issues similar to Representative Dill's in that we need housing. We are looking for a workforce that is not there. And that those people who are unemployed or not fully employed are in desperate need of retraining, education to help them fit jobs that are available. So it's very important in our district. But I think we can look at it as an entire issue in Minnesota. When Representative Moran talked about the issues that gather around the metropolitan area, it seems to me that a lot of this is just Minnesota struggles with making sure that we have the training that we need to make sure that the people are employed and maybe even encourage some movement. It's not so bad living up north. and wide open spaces and some beautiful opportunities also there. So as we look to find people, help people with jobs and opportunities, I think that we can think about Minnesota as a whole, not as individual areas. Thank you.
Representative Kim Norton, I'm the DFL lead on this committee. And I have had the pleasure of representing Greater Minnesota's Regional Center of Rochester. And again, this committee will deal with, it's entitled Greater Minnesota, but indeed our needs are different all around the state, whether it be rural or regional or even in the cities, as Representative Moran mentioned. I've served in a workforce since I came to the legislature 9 years ago now, and have worked a lot on accountability, transparency, and training. And hope to continue that on this committee and look forward to working with Representative Gunther and in his place the vice chair. So this will be great, and I think that's it.
Good afternoon. I'm Patrick Grofflow. I'm serving in my sixth term in the Minnesota House. I represent portions of rural Dakota and Goodhue counties. And I think we would all agree that right now there's a misalignment in the skills that young workers and older workers have in possession and what the workforce needs, and putting those two in alignment is good for Minnesota, whether you're a progressive or whether you're a conservative. From the progressive side, you're going to see higher income growth, more involvement. From the Republican side or the conservative side, you're going to see less dependence on government, more free market economics, and greater economic opportunity. So for me, I think that's the area I'm most interested in on this committee, is getting those two in alignment with each other. We have plenty of people who are majoring in philosophy and are graduating with lots of college debt, and those skills are really not in demand in our workforce right now, but we do have other skill sets that are in desperate need, and it'd be good for Minnesota if we get those two in alignment. So I'm really excited for this committee and to work with Chair Gunther. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Hancock. I represent 2A. It runs from Lake of the Woods, northwest angle, down to south of Akeley in White Oak Township. I owned a retail tire store for 23 years in Bemidji. Small business is at my heart, and I think it's basically the heart of Minnesota in general. We employ a good many of the people. My area is unique in the sense that we have a four-year university, we have Votech schools, we have a K-12 program that is working on some of the trades we used to call vocational training. But all these working together for workforce development, I think, is very healthy. I think we also need to look at the idea to grow our economy. We need access to our resources and access to long-term affordable energy, and we need to make a better business climate for our small and our Fortune 500 companies that are up in that area as well. So the purview of this committee is very exciting to me, in the sense that we are looking to develop the economy of not just Greater Minnesota, but the state of Minnesota as a whole. And I look forward to that discussion in those areas where we can work. Thank you.
My name is Tim Miller, and I represent District 17A, which is Swift, Chippewa, Renville, and Kanawha counties. And I'm very excited to be part of this committee. I think this is going to be a committee that produces a lot of surprises in the legislature, so I'm excited about that. I grew up in the Chicago metropolitan area in a very small suburb of 30,000. Now I live in a town of 500. And so I do understand sort of the differences in the two different types of communities, but I like to put a twist on the name of this committee. We're called Greater Minnesota. And I think if, as a whole state, as we work together for what's the betterment of our different regions, and that's what I hope comes out of this, that we are going to have a Greater Minnesota. There are some specific things. I've had some people come to me that have said, there was this law that was passed, and it's a good law, but here's how it doesn't quite fit for our area. And I hope that's what I bring to the table, is the opportunity to say, let's refine some of the things that may work very well in this form in this part of the state, but maybe if we amend it a little bit, we can make it work for this other part of the state. So I hope that we do that in this committee as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ben Lean. I'm a second-term member from District 4A, which is the city of Moorhead and Oakport Township. And you know, I really wanted to be on this committee because although our state's economy is doing relatively well, there are certainly gaps out there, and particularly skills gaps. And so, you know, I really hope this committee is able to identify those particular fields, those particular sectors, where we really do need to beef up our job training, where we are able to connect workers to the jobs out there, and do so in a way that's going to benefit not just the private sector, but the entire state going forward and the entire state's economy going forward. So I very much look forward to this committee's work.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Representative Brian Johnson from 32A, which is most of Isani County and northern Chisago County. I was intrigued with this committee when I saw that it was available. Minnesota, we have probably some of the best employees in the country. You can tell that because we have companies and corporations from all over the country and all over the nation coming to Minnesota to take our good employees out of our state. We need to do what we can to get, instead of having those companies and corporations recruiting people out of Minnesota, do what we can to get those corporations, companies into Minnesota, all across the state, and grow this economy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Sundin. I represent District 11A, which encompasses Carlton County. The major cities up there would be Moose Lake and Cloquet. We have a diverse economy in that district. We have logging and paper industry. We have some farming, and 10% of the constituents I represent are Native Americans. I grew up in International Falls, Coochin County, and I got out of there just in time. Let me tell you, when the paper, when Boise Cascade folded up their insulate plant, the town just circled the ball. It was a terrible thing to see. And I saw a lot of people that I went to high school with have to be retrained and move out of that area. And the state of Minnesota did help them on some of their retraining efforts. And I think we should always have that in mind, retraining of workers that have been displaced. I attended Itasca Community College, and back then it was just simply a small community college. Right now they focus have an engineering focus to supply the mines with some of the high-tech workers that they need. And if we can focus on that as well, use that as a model moving forward throughout the state, I think we can do good work in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And one more staff member that came in late, if you want to introduce yourself.
I apologize for being late. My name is David Sullivan. I'm with House DFL Research. I've been in the House for 8 years now, and much of that time I've spent working on the Jobs Committees, Ways and Means, Commerce, and a few others.
Thank you. And for the record, I am Steve Green. I'll ask you to bear with me today. I did not intend to be chairing this committee. I was the vice chair. I didn't know Bob wasn't going to be here. I just found out this afternoon, so if I fumble around a little bit, make some mistakes. You'll have to suck it up because that's the way it is. I am from northern Minnesota. The bottom of my district runs along the Park Rapids, Monaga area over to Frazee and then over to Lake Park. And then I go north from there almost to Highway 2. My area takes in farming, tourism, and logging, and also some industry. I have the White Earth Nation within my district, and so we have a variety of issues that we can work on. When I first saw this committee, I didn't really know what to expect, but the more I started looking into it, you know, for a long time, many of the people on both sides of the aisle have talked about what we can do to enhance jobs in Minnesota, particularly greater Minnesota, where we're losing a lot of our young people to the urban areas. And I think this is an opportunity for us to show what we can do if we work together. You know, some of the issues that you guys talked about, they impact us all. And so I'm anxious to be getting some bills from you guys on workforce development. I do know that if we're going to provide the workforce that we think we need, we're going to have to work with companies. I know Representative Dill mentioned the mines, and in my area we have the potato plant, and then further north there's the recreation plants up there, Polaris and Articat, and DigiKey is up there. And so if we can work with businesses around the state, no matter where they are, and ask them what they need to fill their positions. Some people might say that we're behind the ball here, that we've already gotten to a point where we've lost businesses, such as in International Falls. I think that we can turn that around, and I actually think this is coming at an opportune time. You know, Representative Dill mentioned how they're looking at retirements. We have the same thing across the whole North Country, where companies are telling me that their average worker is over 50 now. And so if we can get started now in working on these issues, I think that we can dodge that ball and really make a difference. The chairman, who I very much wish was here because he was so excited about this committee, is constantly telling me all Minnesota matters. And that's the truth. And that's what I hope we will be working on here in this session. Aside from that, I am a family man. I've run a business for all of my adult life, a couple different businesses actually. I've got 6 kids and now I've got 10 grandkids. And even though some of them moved out of Minnesota for some of the same reasons the people that you know that we've heard here, some of them are still here. And I'd like to keep them here and I'd like to have them come back. I've been a lot of places and I don't think there's a better place to live than Minnesota. So I think we can get to work on that. That being said, I want to thank everybody for being here, and now I'd like to invite Anita Newman, a nonpartisan legislative analyst, to provide an overview of our committee's policy jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And I'm not on retainer by the paper industry, but I have provided in your packets quite a bit of paper just for you to have for your review later, which is just some of the things that I'm going to talk about here. I've been asked to give the committee the 35,000-foot view of some of the issues and the primary agencies that this committee would likely work with in carrying out the things that you pass out of here. So the first thing in your packet is one of the biggest agencies this committee would deal with, and one that has a very, very broad reach in terms of economic development and job creation, is this document, which is simply the index page from the Department of Employment and Economic Development's website. And if you look at this, you get a kind of a flavor for the broad range of programs and services and initiatives that agency oversees, has information on, and would likely administer on your behalf. Having worked with this for a while now, I sort of see that there are three main ways that you can divide DEET up. One of them is certainly the economic development and job creation aspect, and there is another group of paper that I provided with you, which is a summary of the permanent, the statutory economic development and job creation programs that are currently authorized in the state of Minnesota. What this document doesn't contain are all the session law programs, all the grant programs that get funded on a two-year basis, programs that are piloted, and things like that that are not in statute. So these are the statutory permanent economic development and job creation programs in the state. Representative Norton, before the meeting, was asking me a question about a couple of other fairly major programs that are session law programs, two-year funded or pilot programs. Those would not be included in this document, but this is something that you may want to use as a reference as we go through and start examining programs and new offerings as they seek to fit into some of the existing things that the state offers. Another document, another huge area that DEED focuses on is workforce development and job training. Sort of the flagship program, I think, in this area is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership. And the document that's in your packet is the last annual report that was done. They are preparing a new one, and DEED is going to visit with you within the next few days and give you a much more detailed overview of all their programs and services. But the the Job Skill Partnership training program focuses on linking the education and training resources in the state with the needs of workers and employers as they seek to create and fill jobs. So that's another very important area that this committee is going to likely look at. The third area that the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and it's a big issue area, is the unemployment insurance program. I didn't provide you with anything in writing on that. The department, during their overview, will be able to present you with a lot of facts and figures on that program. Tourism promotion is another area that this committee will deal with. The state agency that administers that is the tourism promotion entity for the state, is Explore Minnesota Tourism. The information that's in your packet is from their budget page in the Department of Management and Budgets budget system. This is based on the December forecast and the information. When the February forecast comes out, this may or may not be updated, but at least this gives you some background information on what this agency does, what some of their resources are, what some of their primary targets are. A third agency that will be very important in this committee and the issues that this committee will deal with is the Department of Labor and Industry. What I have provided you is basically their organizational chart, and you can see that they do four sort of primary things. They operate and administer the OSHA programs, the Occupational Safety and Health programs, as well as the workers' compensation system. Plus, they do all the labor standards and apprenticeship program, minimum wage, prevailing wage, sick leave, overtime, all sorts of those issues. And they also do all the building codes, licensing, permitting, occupational licensing, and issues like that. And this committee may very well see legislation specifically targeted to Greater Minnesota on some of those issues. The workforce housing, there's already been a great deal of talk about that this early in the session. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has some programs already for the Challenge Grant Program that deals somewhat with workforce housing, but in some of the early discussions, housing finance has already been mentioned as sort of one of the major players in this area. So the information in your packet about the Housing Finance Agency, again, is from their overview information that's contained in the Minnesota Management and Budget system. So that, again, is provided for your review when you have time to take a look at what that agency does and kind of the scope of some of its initiatives. And the final thing that I will mention is the Public Facilities Authority. And this is an entity that coordinates with the federal government and other state agencies to administer public infrastructure financing programs, primarily at the local level. And that's all I'll say about this entity, because the director is here today to give you a much more detailed look at what the Public Facilities Authority does. As far as staffing these areas, as Mr. Weeks mentioned in his introduction, he will do all the labor and employment law issues for this committee. I will do all the economic development, the workforce training, the job training, construction codes and licensing, inspection permitting, and things like that. And as housing issues come up, we actually have a person in house research whose area of expertise is housing, and so she will make cameo appearances as needed to help you through the housing issues. And Mr. Chair, that's my 35,000 foot overview.
That was a great overview. Thank you, Anita. Or should I say Ms. Newman? I'm looking at the agenda, and I do see that I think Jeff Freeman came in. Jeff, here? Okay. And I know that he had other places he wanted to go, so we'll go through the rules after Mr. Freeman speaks, if that's okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the director of the Public Facilities Authority. I think you have in your packet our handout that's got some green and blue pages toward the back and our little pipe valve logo at the top. The Public Facilities Authority, and I'll go kind of quickly, I won't be talking in a lot of detail. There's a lot of information here that you can take with you, and I'm happy to take questions now, but also if anybody wants to give me a call or email at some point later with a specific question about a project or something, I'd be happy to take those. The Public Facilities Authority is a multi-agency authority that provides infrastructure financing and technical assistance to local governments for infrastructure projects, primarily wastewater and drinking water infrastructure. We're governed by a board of six state commissioners representing the departments of Employment and Economic Development, Minnesota Management and Budget, Health Department, Agriculture, Transportation, and the Pollution Control Agency. The PFA manages investments and transactions from three revolving loan funds and several other grant and loan programs. In conjunction with those member agencies, and I'll talk more about that, but in general, our partner agencies set project priorities, do technical reviews of projects. The PFA is responsible for the financial side. We do the credit reviews of the communities, set loan terms and conditions, service the loans, all of that. We also, the PFA has, will receive federal and some state matching funds that capitalize the revolving loan programs. And then we have revenue bonding authority to issue up to $1.5 billion in PFA revenue bonds to generate additional loan funds. And those are revenue bonds rated AAA by all three rating agencies. They're not backed by the state at all. They're solely backed by the loan repayments and investment earnings of the PFA. PFA receives no general funds for program administration. Our administrative costs are paid primarily on a small fee that we take as the loan repayments come back in. We have nine FTEs. We also pay for some positions at the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department for their technical responsibilities as part of administering the programs. The second page of the handout gives just a little diagram that kind of illustrates the different departments that make up the PFA and how the programs are connected to those. The next page is a little more detail on our programs, starting with clean water programs. And what we consider base programs are the Clean Water Revolving Fund is our largest program. That's our revolving loan program for wastewater and stormwater infrastructure projects. It's been in existence now for about 25 years. We've made a total of $2.7 billion in loans, 495 loans, communities of all sizes throughout the state. Because those loans are made at below market interest rates, there's an interest savings that we calculate each time we make the loan. So those total $2.7 billion in loans have provided interest savings to local governments and taxpayers of $645 million. As I mentioned before, we receive annual federal capitalization grants for this program. Last year was about $25 million. There's a 20% state match, and then we leverage those funds with our revenue bonds. With the repayments and the leveraging and the federal dollars, there's a very positive bang for the buck on the state dollars. In total, this program has provided $14 in construction for every $1 of state funds that we've received and about $3 of interest savings. Our current intended use plan, which is the funding list of projects that are eligible to receive loans this year. We have 109 projects for about $197 million. And then we work with the Pollution Control Agency that has a priority list of, that's really a five-year list of cities that have applied and requested to be on the list and considered for funding. These are complicated projects and oftentimes can take several years in the planning and design stages, so that five-year list from the PCA is a total right now, almost 300 projects, about $1.5 billion in total. Our a program that we use to combine funds with the loan program is the WIF program, Wastewater Infrastructure Fund. These are supplemental grants based on affordability criteria for high-cost projects. And they can actually be used two different ways. One is to match funds with USDA Rural Development, a federal agency that also provides loans and grants, and we partner with them a lot. Or it can be used to combine with our own Clean Water Revolving Fund loans. Last bonding bill, we got about $18.3 million for the WIF program, and all of those funds are now committed to projects that are either under construction or in the final phases of getting their approvals and ready to bid this spring. We also have two programs, clean water programs, that are funded through the Clean Water Legacy Fund. Point source implementation grants provide some grant funds when cities are required to provide an additional higher level of treatment to meet a specific water quality goal. Also, the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program is specifically focused on small unsewered communities with loans and grants to help them address problems with failing septic systems. Call your attention to the note at the bottom of that page. All of these clean water programs all follow the same, the PCA's project priority list. And I'll show you a little bit more about that in a minute. On the next page, other PFA programs, the Drinking Water Revolving Fund operates very similarly to the Clean Water Fund. It's focused on drinking water treatment plants, water towers, water mains, wells, all of that kind of thing for community water systems. It's a newer program, been around for about 15 years, 354 loans for $704 million in total. Works very similarly to the Clean Water Fund. We also have a transportation revolving loan fund, a much smaller loan program, also been around for 15 years, but as you can see, we've done about 34 loans for $176 million. Department of Transportation works with communities to identify projects that would be a good fit for this program and sets priorities. Generally, this program is about one to two or three projects a year. And you can see recent loans to the city of Browerville and also Carver County for a bridge replacement project that we just recently made that loan. Finally, we administer a credit enhancement program. This is totally different from the others. This is not direct financing to local governments, but rather the local governments, either counties or cities, for specific purposes, can issue their own general obligation bonds, and through this program receive a limited state guarantee on the debt service of those for those local bonds, which allows them to get a better interest rate. The next page gives you a list of all of the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund project or loans that we've made since the beginning of the program. You can see by year the loans made, the number, interest rate, and the estimated interest savings from those loans each year. Of course, the interest rates have changed a lot since 1990. You can see that we're making loans at an average rate of about a little over 5%, and currently we're down to about 1%. So we're required by law to make loans at below market interest rates, but as interest rates themselves have gotten down to historic levels, our loans have been lower and lower, and we have a 1% minimum as our minimum interest rate, and most loans that we've made lately have been at 1%. The bottom part of the page shows the distribution of those loans throughout the state by region, and the very bottom shows a split between the loans that we've made from the beginning of the program to the Met Council, other metro cities, and non-metro or greater Minnesota cities. Met Council provides wastewater treatment services for the entire Twin City metropolitan area, and so they're our biggest borrower. But you can see that the loan dollars roughly have been split fairly evenly between metro and greater Minnesota. But then if you look over to the next set of columns, over far more in terms of number of loans to greater Minnesota communities, because the loan amounts are smaller, projects are smaller. And then the far right at the bottom, the interest savings, you can see is actually weighted more heavily to the non-metro cities, and that's because in our interest rate structure we provide a greater discount to smaller communities based on per household cost than we do to the larger communities. So the loan numbers are pretty evenly split. The interest savings is weighted more to the greater Minnesota cities, but it works very well to have a loan portfolio that's a mix of large cities, small cities, metro cities, greater Minnesota cities. Having that mix in our loan portfolio is one of the major strengths that the rating agencies cite when they rate our bonds AAA, that there's a real strength to that kind of diverse portfolio, allows us to sell bonds at the best interest rates, make loans at lower interest rates, and that strength helps everybody. The next page shows kind of the similar distribution for the drinking water program, which As I mentioned, a newer program began in 1999, but similar distribution actually on the drinking water program, the dollars are much more heavily weighted to greater Minnesota cities than the metro area. The next page, there's a couple of bar charts that show the loans that we've made over the past 10 years or so compared to the, which are the green bars, compared to the federal grants and the state match that we've received, the blue and the red bars. You can see a couple of things. One is that the financing does go up and down quite a bit from year to year for various reasons. Some of it is just simply that bigger projects, when they happen to be ready to go. In some cases, cities' projects get delayed for various reasons, and so there is a bouncing around somewhat, especially the drinking water seems to bounce around particularly more than the clean water for some reason. You can also see a big spike in 2010, which is the, and then a little, some smaller spikes in years after that with the federal stimulus dollars. We got quite a bit of extra federal money that those years, and we're able to fund more projects. The last couple of years have been kind of, actually 2013 and 2014 were smaller years. I think it's still city budgets still recovering from the recession, and combined with the fact that a lot of the backlog was of projects was probably taken care of in the prior years. This year we've seen a rebound. We're only halfway through the fiscal year, and we already have clean water loans are close to what they were last year in total, and drinking water more than twice as much as we did all of last year. The next page starts with the green sheets. This is the project priority list that the Pollution Control Agency ranks projects. As I mentioned, cities apply to get on the list. It's roughly intended to be a five-year list of projects. Some are ready to go this year. Some are still in the early planning stages. Cities that are seeking funding apply to the Pollution Control Agency, and the projects are ranked based on their rules, based on environmental and public health criteria. When a city believes its project is going to be ready for construction in a given year, then they apply to us for what's called the intended use plan. And as you look at this list, the cities are listed in rank order down the side, and then going across, there's a project description that's kind of cut off, but there's an estimated total project cost, and then you can start to see the different funding programs of the PFA as well as our funding partners. Projects that have a dollar amount under that column that says CWRF loan 2015 IUP fundable range, those are projects that have applied for loans this year and are moving toward getting the final approvals done, and their projects ready to start construction. We don't make the loan or award any of the grants or loans until the project is ready to start construction. And that's the, if you look closely, you can see kind of the shaded lines that go across the page. Those are projects that we have funded. They're under construction right now. This list started in July and August with the state fiscal year. And then other projects are, as I said, in various places moving through the process. So you can see the intended use plan loans. You can see there's a column that says CWRF principal forgiveness. That's the federal funds that we receive. The federal government requires a portion of those funds to be used as grants to match with the loans, although they can't, I guess, bring themselves to use the word grants, so they call it principal forgiveness, and that's what we call it, because otherwise they get honest about it, but essentially that's grant money that we take out of the federal funds that we receive. The next column over is the WIF grant. That's the shaded columns or the shaded numbers there, the money that we received in the last bonding bill and projects that are either under construction now or getting ready for construction in the spring. There are some columns there that show estimated WIF need. As I mentioned, those funds are based on an affordability calculation and based on preliminary information that we have, we determine how much each project might be eligible for under that WIF program if the funds were available. There's some columns for the Clean Water Legacy programs, the Point Source Implementation Grants, the Small Community has a Technical Assistance Grant, as well as construction funding. You can see those numbers there. And then to the further right, other funders that we coordinate with and work with closely, USDA Rural Development. A lot of times, and their specialty is small, very small rural communities, and so as we work with them, we often will direct cities to apply to rural development. They have field staff around the state, and they're very good at helping cities through the design and through the funding process. There's also the DEED Small Cities Development Program, provides some grant funds. Those are HUD block grant dollars that DEED gets, and some of those go to infrastructure projects that we coordinate the funding. So a lot of projects will receive funding from more than one source, and we work to make sure a city gets all of the different funding that they might be eligible for and bring that all together and when the project is ready for construction. So you can see that goes on for 8 pages. Our revolving loan fund, those dollars are, because we always have a repayment stream coming back in and we have reserves, we're able to set a constant funding list or funding process for those revolving loan funds. Typically 45 points on the PCA's priority list has been our cutoff for the past number of years. This year we actually stretched that down to 38 points. And so you can see on page, I guess it's 6 of 8, where the last project with a dollar amount under that 2015 IUP fundable range, you can see the city of Waverly there at 38 points. So that's as far down as the loan dollars go. And then the WIF dollars that go below that are just estimates because we don't have those funds. Those are just estimated needs. The PSIG grants, the legacy dollars, we do go down below that that fundable range because those funds, through the legacy appropriations, we try to make sure, or at least we request funds based on all of the projects that we anticipate being eligible. After the green sheets, there's a couple of white sheets with alphabetical listing of the projects. If you're looking for a particular city to help find them on the list. And then there are some blue sheets, which is the drinking water revolving fund. It's basically the same process. The projects in this case are ranked by the health department based on public health criteria. There's fewer columns under the PFA section. We don't have the additional programs that we do for clean water. So we've got the drinking water revolving fund loan, the 2015 IUP column, and the principal forgiveness column, and then our other funding partners that are listed there as well. And that's the stop there and ask if there are any questions.
Yeah, Mr. Freeman, I would just two questions. Well, first of all, I don't. I was distracted. Did you give your name and position when you? If you haven't, would you do that, please?
I think I did.
Okay.
Jeff Freeman, Director of the Public Facilities Authority.
Okay, thank you, and I apologize for that. On the blue pages, the rankings from MDH, are they, they start out at 43 and then they go down. Is there a cutoff for those also?
The drinking water list for the current year, and this has been... The cutoff is set each year by the board based on loan capacity and demand, but actually this year there is no cutoff. All projects on the priority list that have a project ready to go are, we have funding capacity to do them all, and so we have projects, fundable projects listed all the way down to 5 points, which is the lowest point valued on the list.
Okay.
The drinking water program has lending capacity to do, on average, based on our modeling, about $40 million a year on average. So certainly some years we've been over that and some years we've been under, but that's we track that from year to year and use that to help guide where we, you know, set that cutoff, or in this case to push the all the way down to the bottom of the list.
Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Freeman? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Number one, Mr. Freeman, with regards to the WIF funding, is there a requirement that that be bonding, or can cash be used as a funding source for that?
There is no requirement that it be bonding. It typically is. There have been, I think, maybe one or two times when appropriations have been made from cash as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Freeman, in a previous term, there was a very nice matrix the PFA had put together showing funding. It was a grid showing what the funding sources were and what the expenditures were. Do you know what I'm talking about? This was a couple of terms ago. It was a very helpful cheat sheet that could show members. Do you know if you still have that, or if staff could maybe put something together for members? I don't remember what color it was. It was one sheet cheat sheet that showed the revenue sources and the expenditures for each of the programs.
It doesn't immediately come to mind, but I'll look back. We've got records from past sessions. I'll look back at our handouts and see if I can find that.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Freeman, if there's a pot, if you guys can't find it, if you have a staff member, maybe put that together. It was the kind of thing that I remember when I got it, I thought I should laminate this and stick it on the wall because it was so helpful. But if you could do that, that'd be fantastic.
Okay.
So thank you.
Mr. Freeman, can you tell me how cities and towns and municipalities apply, and what is the deadline?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There's a notice that goes out, a joint notice by the PFA, the Pollution Control Agency, and the Health Department that's sent to all cities in the state. I think it went out this year, went out in December. It gives the instructions for applying for the lists. The deadline for the getting on the PCA's priority list, I think, is coming up March 1st. The Health Department deadline for the drinking water program is, I believe, in early May. The website, both the PFA's website and the websites for those two agencies have that notice, as well as they have the scoring worksheet posted that cities or their consulting engineer would fill out and submit to do the scoring. I think for the most part, cities, and with some help maybe from their engineer, can kind of figure out that score on their own and then sort of know how they're going to stack up on the list. So it's a pretty easy process, and staff are available to help if a city has any trouble with that.
Thank you. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Freeman, can you comment a little bit? I know you had mentioned that some of the increases in project financing for the Clean Water Fund and the Drinking Water Fund were a couple of years ago a result of some federal federal stimulus dollars. Can you comment a little bit on the increase in the 2015 use?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's sort of speculative because I don't really know for sure, but my sense is that cities, to some extent, it's city budgets are just now starting to recover. I think they've lagged some of the other indicators in the economy for a lot of cities. There's kind of these, some of these projects can be put off for a while, but they can't be put off forever. And I think probably the fact that we've had some smaller years for a couple of years, we're now seeing that projects that were on the list and got delayed or postponed for one reason, this year cities are finally deciding if this is the year and they're going ahead. So that's my speculation.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one follow-up. I know as the MPCA is looking at further requirements for point source pollution, I know this is maybe a little speculative also, but do you anticipate further asks or further requests from cities for help for some of their treatment plants? And if so, you know, again, kind of speculative, but how would you anticipate we're able to essentially come up with the money for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, the Point Source Implementation Grant is PSIG, the acronym on the list here. That's one of the programs that PFA has received Clean Water Legacy funds for, and it's specifically to help cities do that very thing. PCA, yes, a lot of cities are seeing that there are more stringent phosphorus limits, other pollutants that are being addressed more rigorously. And so when a city is required, there are TMDL, total maximum daily load, studies that are done to protect or restore a particular water body. There's other permitting procedures that the PCA goes through to kind of impose those more stringent requirements. And when a city is required to do that, they are eligible for the PSIG grant program. That's a 50% grant, 50% of the cost to address that additional requirement, up to $3 million of grant. And so that's an annual process that cities apply for that. And we do anticipate there being an increase in projects going forward. And we do, based on kind of those projected needs that we see, we develop requests for those Clean Water Legacy dollars.
Any more questions? Thank you, Mr. Freeman. I appreciate you coming. I need to do a little cleanup. When Ms. Newman was finished with her report, I neglected to ask for questions. Is there any questions for Ms. Newman? Representative Barrett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. I just had a couple thoughts. I think it was her presentation was good, and it gave us a good outline of economic development. But there's a sheet she provided, which I was kind of curious about, and I'm hoping maybe some other members might be as curious as I am. It's titled Economic Development and Job Creation Programs in Minnesota. It's probably about a 10-page report showing a bunch of different programs that we currently have to incent jobs and business development. And so I was wondering about that, and I know some of these programs are loans, grants, probably some tax relief, some are marketing strictly without any direct benefit. Some probably relate to lower interest rates. Has there been any analysis of these programs? I guess I'd like to understand which ones work well and maybe which ones we don't see a lot of activity. And if you know, and it's probably a question more for the group, now that I think about it collectively as we look forward to the session and meeting. I'm sure we'll dig into these programs in greater detail, but if there's any information that Ms. Newman would have, that would be good.
Ms. Newman?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett, in the previous session, there was the unsession initiative to repeal programs and such that were no longer useful or had outlived their usefulness or that the state had moved beyond. I think on this list, there were only a cut, and I kept them on here because they were recent repeals, but I noted them. For example, on page 3, it's the Board of Invention. That was repealed in 2014. And then there's another one, the biomedical, it's BICI is the acronym, and that was a program that was repealed in 2014. But other than that, the rest of these programs, there was not any action taken to roll them back or to undo them.
Just a follow-up to that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Ms. Newman. I appreciate that. So I'm kind of wanting to understand at a high level what one or two programs are used most often that are used by a wide variety of businesses. Or are they more niche programs that affect certain categories of our business? I'm just trying to understand where we get the most benefit, maybe, so that I kind of understand what we're doing and what we're doing well and what we could do more of, both for my area and also across the state. I know that's not a direct question, but is there anything you could provide there? And I'm not trying to put you on the spot at all. Really, it's more for this committee probably as we go forward, so I don't really need the answer today. But, I think part of this committee is doing the things that Minnesota does well and doing more of that and doing less of the things that, maybe haven't worked. And so as an analyst by trade, that's kind of where my mind goes, is what's working, what can we do more of? Any insights you have? If not, we can tackle that at a later date, too.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett, I think, I can't make that call for you. I would say it's in the eye of the beholder what programs are valuable and what aren't. Some of these are very broad-based programs, and some of them are more niche programs and designed for very specific purposes. So.
Thank you. And I know House Research isn't the area involved in managing the program, so asking a question that probably is for DEED or some other area of government.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for the committee, generally when the budget proposals come out from the governor's office, there's one-page summaries listing the effectiveness of it, and they usually have two or three metrics on there measuring performance and effectiveness. I think they've done that for about 7 or 8 years. So as those budget proposals come forward, we'll see on many of those accounts, not all of them, but on many of them, you'll see the performance metrics as defined by the executive branch. But beyond that, if you're looking at the list here, if there's two items that you're kind of looking at, the larger ones you could look at, my advice would be to look at number one, the on page 4, the Minnesota Investment Fund. That seems to be a bigger initiative. And then more recently, the Minnesota Job Creation Fund on page 5. Those would be two programs I'd recommend that members take a look at in terms of what's going on.
Do we have any other questions? If not, I'm going to run through the rules real quickly here. And you guys should have a copy of the rules in your packets. But to clarify, if you can't make the meeting, please have your LA
contact Rebecca Mead, our CLA. All representative, all amendments should be given to the committee administrator, Laura Larson, by 5 p.m. prior to the committee meeting. To request a bill hearing, authors must submit a written or electronic request to Ms. Larson. Authors are expected to contact their own witnesses and provide their witnesses' names and position titles to the committee administrator in advance of the hearing. Written materials intended to be presented to the committee must be provided to Ms. Larson by 5 p.m. the day prior to the committee hearing. Are there any questions? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd request a written copy of those or an email to my staff. It seems each of my committees has a different deadline. It's not always the 12 hours or the 24 hours in advance, so it would just be helpful to have that in writing.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, if that's the case, I guess we will adjourn.